Tony Hillerman's mystery novels evoke a deep sense of place and people. The place is the American Southwest, and the people are the Navajo. Hillerman's following outside the Southwest has grown since the publication in 1986 of his novel Skinwalkers. That novel brought together the heroes of his new book, A Thief of Time, two Navajo tribal policemen, Lieutenant Joe Leaphorn and Officer Jim Chi. When we spoke, I asked Hillerman to describe his main characters.
I think of Leaphorn as a fellow in his late 50s, sort of skinny, sort of what we call a Tuba City type Navajo, a western side of the reservation, cynical fellow, a well-read. In this book, he is consumed with grief, kind of guy that I would like myself.
Okay. Now, he is working nowadays in your novels with a younger police officer, a younger Navajo police officer named Jim Chi. And Jim Chi is much more of a believer than Joe Leaphorn is.
I think of Chi as a more romantic fellow, far more traditional. Incidentally, this is not unusual on the reservation to find your younger people more traditional than your older ones, and also speaking the language better. Chi is a kind of guy that would get on my nerves, as he gets on Leaphorn's nerves.
Now, part of the story is that these two officers are searching for a missing anthropologist. It's interesting to have anthropology as the backdrop for your novel because I think for the Navajo, it's a sacrilege to dig up bones and to disinter the past.
Well, yeah, it's not something the average Navajo is going to do much of. They have an attitude grown out of very practical reasons that corpses are something to be avoided. And you get around corpses, you get sick. And the Navajos carry it one step further into the metaphysics, and being around corpses too much gets you sick psychologically, see? In other words, ghost sickness translated into more Freudian language.
What is ghost sickness?
Ghost sickness is the kind of sickness that one gets if one is infected by a chindi, the ghost of the emanation left behind by the death of a person. In the Navajo tradition, in the old beliefs, when one dies, all that remains is all of that person that was not in harmony. In other words, the good disappears, the evil lingers on.
You're not Native American yourself. How did you get to know so much about the traditions and the attitudes of Native Americans?
Two things. I got an early start by being born and raised around Potawatomi and Seminole Indians, going to an Indian school for girls, oddly enough. And then long-standing interest in religion and in the kind of people to whom metaphysical beliefs are important enough so they affect the way they live.
Now, how did you start writing about the Navajo?
Well, I started I've done a little bit of nonfiction, you know, magazine stuff, not much and not important, but I wanted to be an author, you know, have people pay attention to me and go on book tours.
Now you learned the hard way.
Yeah, and so I thought, well, I'm going to eventually write to, you know, War and Peace in Potawatomi County, but first I'm going to do something easier, and I'd been reading Graham Greene and Eric Ambler and Raymond Chandler, and I've been aware of what certain mystery writers can do with the mystery form, and I thought, I'll do one of those, and since I don't know whether I can plot or not, I'll lean on my strength, which is description, and I will run this story against the backdrop of the Navajo people and the Navajo reservation, in whom I thought everybody must be fascinated. I was a little bit wrong about that, but that's how I got started.
It seems to me by having a Navajo main character in your novels, you ran the risk of having Native Americans say, who's this white guy? Well, what does he know? Who's he to be writing about Native Americans?
I was very conscious of it, very uneasy about it. And when I went to book signings around the reservation, I'd have Navajos show up, and at first they'd say, hey, I thought you were a Navajo, you know, which was a high compliment. I don't worry about it now. I gradually dawned on me that the average Navajo is like the average Rotarian. He you know, he doesn't know much about his religion. By now, I've learned, frankly, a heck of a lot about that side of it. And in other ways, I've never bought the idea that there's any racial differences between people. Differences are cultural.
You said earlier that one of the things that interested you in the Navajo was finding a group of people for whom metaphysical beliefs was important to how they lived. Now, what religion were you born into?
I was born a Roman Catholic in a little, tiny little place, Sacred Heart, Oklahoma, where we were surrounded by a vast ocean of fundamentalists and were looked upon as sort of, you know, sort of like a nine-hair Krishnas in the middle of of Ethiopia. Or, you know, we were, people came and looked at us, and so, you know, I'm still a religion has always been important to me and always will be.
So you're practicing?
Yeah, mm-hmm, sure enough.
Does your religion offer to you the same kind of meaning and larger context that you see it offering to the Navajo? You know, the thing that drew you to them in the first place.
Yeah, in a way, it's different, of course, because being a Christian, I the goal is life after death. The Navajo, who has at best a nebulous notion of life after death, has a religion which is aimed purely focused on keeping one in harmony in the present life. Their religion is a system of curing ceremonials, which they were taught by the holy people, which should bring you back into harmony if you get out of harmony. And because of that, they have, no value attached to revenge, because if somebody does something nasty to you, he was out of harmony, and he should be cured, not punished.
Do you ever wish that you were Navajo?
Oh, not really. I never even thought about it. I don't see the... As I said, I've never been conscious of racial differences. Having grown up with Potts and Seminoles and Blackfeet, I mean, hell, we were country boys. See, we were the Potts and the Seminoles and I. We got on the school bus and carried our lunch in a sack and didn't have any money and wore bib overalls. And the other, there was us and them. I was us. I mean, us were the Indians and I and my brother. The them were the town boys, the kids who wore, you know, belt pants and low-cut shoes and had money and knew how to shoot pool and knew how to use telephones. You know, the sophisticated folks.
I think some writers who grow up poor, when they start writing, want to kind of compensate for that and end up writing things that aren't in their voice at all, but that sound like it should be in the voice of great literature. A lot of writers have told me that, and I wonder if you went through anything like that before you felt comfortable about writing in your own voice.
I had no pretensions of being the Anatole France of of Western America. I just simply, I knew what I could do. I knew I could write clearly. I knew I was good at description. I knew I could move a narrative along. I didn't know if I could develop a character. I didn't know if I could plot. I simply wanted to tell a story. I grew up in a society where my Sacred Heart, Oklahoma, had a cotton gin and two dirt roads crossed there, and there was a store there, a filling station, and sold everything from, as I said, overalls to nails to pig feed to groceries. And people come sit on a porch, and as a little boy, I'd sit there, and you learn that telling stories is valuable, you know, that people respected people who told stories.
Well, I thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Tony Hillerman spoke to us from NPR station KQED in San Francisco. His new mystery novel, A Thief of Time, is published by Harper & Row. This is Fresh Air.